Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Murray Edwards, and as Chairman of Magellan Aerospace Corporation, we'd like you to welcome you to the 2025 annual meeting. First thing I'd like to do here is introduce my fellow directors and officers who are at the front table here. We have Phil Underwood, who is the present CEO and Director of the Board, and Ellen Maloney, who is the CFO at the front table here. In the front row here, we have the remaining directors. Phil and myself are what we call non-independent related directors, so we're no good. We get kicked out of the board meetings. They do all the decisions while it's there. At the front, we have JP Veach here. JP is a former colleague of me from the financial business and has been on the board now for 4 years, JP?
5 years.
5 years, right. Next to Beth Bandler, who's a lawyer by trade, and met Beth originally in 1995, 1996, Beth, when we acquired Rend Aerospace next year. Beth was the solicitor, general counsel for them at the time, met her and over that developed relationship and asked to join the board now, I think, what, 6 years ago, Beth? 10 years ago. Okay. Next is my long-term partner and colleague who went to University of Saskatchewan here, Larry Moeller, right here. And then next to him is Steve Somerville, who also was somebody that we met back in 1996 when we acquired Magellan. Steve was the banker in the deal, and he told me, Murray, you really want us to buy this business. I don't know if I want to finance it, but he did agree to do it, and it's been okay, Steve, so far. So we appreciate your confidence, lack thereof at the time. Thanks, Steve. Okay, the meeting will now come to order. I'll ask Ellen Maloney, to ask the corporate secretary of the corporation to act as secretary of the meeting, and Josette Koffenberg from Computershare Investor Services to act as scrutineer. In order to ensure that the formal business proceeds efficiently, we've asked certain employee shareholders to make and second motions. This is designed to facilitate progression of the meeting as not intended to discourage comments. Before we begin the meeting, we have to remind everybody that there are remarks today that we'll make statements about information that is not historical factual information. This information may be considered to be forward-looking information. Statements about the forward-looking information are, by their very nature and guarantees, Magellan's future operational financial performance are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results could differ materially from what is currently expected. While Magellan believes its expectations are reasonable, they are based on risks and assumptions regarding a number of factors. Details regarding these assumptions and factors, as well as additional information about the material factors, risks, assumptions that could cause our actual results to differ materially from what is currently expected, can be found in Magellan's annual information form, which is available on cedarplus.ca. Magellan does not assume any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information except in accordance with applicable securities law. Now, I didn't write that, so let's be clear. That's the lawyers. I got to do it. Boy, but anyways. Okay, the first thing is we have a couple of housekeeping matters. The business matters to be conducted at this meeting are the items set forth in the Notice of Meeting and Management Proxy Circular of the Corporation, both dated March 21st, 2025, that was mailed or emailed to shareholders. Only shareholders at the close of business on March 21st, 2025, the record date, or their duly appointed proxy holders are entitled to submit questions and vote at this meeting. At the conclusion of the formal part of the meeting, Mr. Underwood will make a short presentation at Corporation's 2024 fiscal year and plans for the future. Notice of meeting. We have received an affidavit from Computershare as to the mailing of the notice and access document and instrument of proxies to shareholders. We direct that this affidavit, together with copies of documents mailed to shareholders, be kept by the secretary with the minutes of this meeting. Okay, next thing is quorum and scrutineer's report. Under the bylaws of the corporation, business may be transacted at this meeting if two persons are present at the meeting and hold or represent by proxy not less than 10% of the votes of the issued shares of the corporation entitled to vote at the meeting. The scrutineer report has confirmed that quorum is present. The scrutineer's report shows that there are 56 proxies cast for shareholders holding or representing 49,504,477 shares, or 86.64% of the shares which are entitled to vote at the meeting. The scrutineer's report will be kept with the minutes of this meeting. As such, there is a quorum of shareholders present, and we now declare the meeting is regularly called and properly constituted for the transaction of business. Voting. All voting done today will be conducted by way of a ballot. Voting on the resolution to appoint the auditors will be conducted by a show of hands unless a shareholder or proxy holder demands a ballot in respect to voting on such resolution. Thank you to those who have already voted prior to the meeting. These votes will be tabulated along with today's vote, and the scrutineers will provide us with a detailed breakdown in the vote after the meeting has been closed, which we will post on SEDAR. Okay. Next here, annual report, financial statements, and the audit report. The next item of formal business is the receipt of the 2024 consolidated financial statements of the corporation as included in the 2024 annual report to shareholders for the fiscal year ended December 31st, 2024, and the audit report thereof. A copy of the annual report and the audit report contained therein has been made available to every registered shareholder in their hard copy or electronically. The financial statement of the corporation for fiscal year ended December 31st, 2023 can also be found on the corporation website or SEDAR. We now place before the meeting the consolidated financial statements of the corporation and the auditor's report thereon for the year ended December 31st, 2024. I think, is there any questions on those? Hearing none, next item is the election of directors. The board has been fixed the number of directors to be elected meeting at 6. We will now undertake nominations for directors of the corporation. Do I have a nominator, please?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Karen Yashiki Gravelson, and I am a shareholder.
How many shares do you own?
A number.
These are good. Okay, can you file your insider report?
I nominate N. Murray Edwards, Philip C. Underwood, Beth M. Bud Bandler, Larry G. Moeller, Stephen Somerville, James P. Leach as directors of the corporation to hold office until the next annual election of directors, or until their successors are elected or appointed, subject to the provisions of the Business Corporations Act, Ontario, and the bylaws of the corporation.
So, Karen, what do you do with the company?
Vice President of Corporate Stewardship and Operational Excellence.
Okay,
great. What that means?
Yes.
So it's quality, environmental, health and safety, continuous improvement, export compliance, and our Magellan operating system.
So you think you need some more tasks?
No.
And how would you report to the shareholders those areas of your response? How do you feel about our sustainability and practices around that?
I think that we've taken a very smart approach, and that is to focus on efficiency, operational efficiency. And if we do that well, the gains to be made in electricity reduction, energy usage will follow.
Well, so you think in many times these investments in sustainability actually pay for themselves through efficiencies gained. Right, and every one of our plants now is now certified to AS1401, is that right? All of our plants around the world, is that right? And so you do a metrics to the board every year or to the health safety committee every year showing how we compare a number of our peers in terms of sustainable metrics. And what does that chart usually show Magellan relative to our peers?
Show not only our peers, but our customers.
Customers, yeah.
And we're right up there with the customers, and we are ahead of our peers.
Right. So when we look at the metrics, which you rate us, our performance uses a number of categories, we tend to be comparable with a lot of our customers. The customers would be people like Boeing, Airbus, General Electric, and we tend to be ahead of most of our peers. No need to mention there. Is that fair? Yes. So we're lucky. Karen does a standing job to us. Thank you, Karen. Do I have a seconder for that motion now?
Chairman, my name is Brian Oakley. I am a shareholder. I second the nomination.
Do you want to share, Brian? How long you own shares for?
Shares for 3 years.
3 years. When did we first meet, Brian?
Second.
When did we first meet?
We met in a boardroom when I presented you with Fleet Industries, the first acquisition of Magellan.
Back in 1995, wasn't it? My boy, time goes by never friend, right, John? That's right.
You
okay.
You used to call me every week and say, did you put the puck in the net?
I did, yes. I know. Did you?
Yeah.
Some days. They're still here, so that's a good sign, right? You didn't get sent to the minors. Thank you, Brian. Are there any further nominations for directors? As there are no further nominations, we now declare nominations closed. To vote for or withhold for voting for each nominee, you need to mark and sign a ballot provided the representative from Computershare. If any registered shareholder proxy in attendance today has not received a ballot, please identify yourself to scrutineers now. Seeing none, since all the ballots are now being collected, we'll now allow the scrutineers time to tally the ballots in the interim. However, I've been informed by the scrutineers that every director has received in excess of 95% for and none against, just some withheld. So I can declare that all directors nominated today are duly appointed directors to hold the office until the next annual meeting of shareholders or pursuant to the Business Corporation Act of Ontario. The next item of business is the appointment of auditors. Do we have a motion in that regard?
I move that the firm of BDO Canada Chartered Professional Accountants be appointed auditors of the corporation until the next annual meeting or until their successors are appointed, and that their remuneration as such be fixed by the board of directors.
Are you Karen, the only two shareholders we have here today? Or that? So, Brian, what do you do with the company, Brian?
I work in business development.
Right. And how is business developing?
Business development is exploding. It's a different time for us right now, as will be attested by my boss, Mr. Martin. The floodgate gates are opening, and the business is going to grow. And we're positioned well.
And why do you think that is? What's changed? Is that a macro, or is it, does it have to do with our own performance? What do you think that is due to, Brian?
What is causing it?
Yeah.
It's just demand for aircraft and demand for companies like ourselves that can do it from start to finish.
Right.
And our biggest accolade from our customers is, you might show some signs of stress, but we don't have to send a team in to fix it. You're capable of doing it on your own.
Right.
So it's a good time.
So you think our relationship with our customers are better today than you've seen in previous years? You think
absolutely.
Are the opportunities are better, you think?
Yeah, and they're recognizing that.
Right.
And it's evidenced by the opportunities we have.
Right. Would you, your boss agree with that, Hayden? Would you agree with that, Hayden? He called you your boss. Yeah, I didn't know that.
I think customers see us as a fairly safe pair of hands.
Right.
And you know, with the global footprint we have, we're able to, you know, offer solutions that fit what the goals of the corporations, you know, Airbus, Boeing, Pratt & Whitney, Safran, they're all approaching us to look to expand their work content with us. So I think over the next couple of years, we should see some significant growth.
So give us a generic example, not specific, but how this global, give us an example how this global footprint helps you in what you do.
There's a huge downward pressure on pricing for small, simple components.
Right.
And historically, we would have lost those, but with the development of our low-cost footprint in India and Poland, we're able to, you know, still hold our margins and in some cases improve them, and offer the pricing that's attractive to the customer.
So we're seeing our customers also go to those markets too then?
Our customers are going to companies in India and Poland directly. But the advantage we have is they see that safety of dealing with somebody they've been dealing with for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Right.
And that, you know, that gives them a level of confidence,
right,
that a new startup in India directly can't get.
Would you agree with Brian's word, the word is exploding? Would you agree that word? Is that a little bit more?
Yeah. I think, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world at the moment, but I think the underlying trends are really strong for us, particularly, you know, without the diversity of our business between defense and, you know, civil aerospace,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, it's one of the real strengths of the business. We're able to, you know, weather storms by focusing on defense,
mm-hmm,
and strong on air and commercial aerospace. So I think, you know, the team's done a great job in the last couple of years in positioning ourselves with some of the defense manufacturers, where I think over the coming years we're going to, you know, with places like Rockwood, we're going to see some real growth opportunities.
Okay, good. Thank you. Do I have a seconder for that motion?
Second
motion. I won't ask a question, Karen. Don't worry. Okay. I'll signify in the usual manner by raising the right hand for the appointment of BDO Canada as a chartered accountant for the corporation for the work time in your own favor. Raise the right hand. Any opposed? Hearing none, I can confirm also that resolution has been passed. We therefore direct scrutineers respect the voting be kept with the minutes of this meeting. Is there any other business for this meeting? As I see there are no questions on the floor in respect to the formal business meeting, I allow to entertain a motion that the meeting be terminated. So moved. Is there a seconder for the motion? Gisu.
I second.
Thank you, Brian. All in favor, please signify the raised hand. Any opposed? Carried. I now declare that the meeting is terminated and now pass the meeting over to Mr. Underwood, who will provide a business update on the presentation and results of the corporation. So I'll pass to you, Phil. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Good afternoon, everyone. So I will be presenting the business and strategic highlights for 2024, with Eleanor Milantoni, our Chief Financial Officer, presenting the financial summary. Starting with the business overview. So Magellan is a global business with 19 divisions and over 3,800 employees worldwide in those three main regions. So in this section, I will update on the commercial and defense market, and starting with the commercial market. So commercial air travel continued in 2024. The International Air Transport Association reported that industry-wide travel grew by 8.6% year over year in 2024, with domestic travel growing by 5.5% and international travel by 10.6%. China and India experienced the largest domestic travel, with growth at 12.3% and 6% respectively. The Air Transportation Association forecasts growth of 8% in 2025, with demand for new commercial aircraft driving strong with the strong order backlogs. Airbus and Boeing both ended the year with strong order backlogs, with over 14,800 aircraft on order. However, supply chain delays, labor shortages, and market disruptions continue to affect the industry's ability to capitalize on this pent-up demand. Also, the three-month Boeing strike in the later part of 2024 impacted the industry. But despite these persistent headwinds, the industry is stabilizing and improving. Boeing is working towards their rate above 38 737s per month, with a goal to reach 57 per month by 2027. Boeing 787 is increasing to 5 per month, and the 777X certification is now planned for early 2026. Airbus is ahead of Boeing with their single aisle production. They plan to reach 65 A320s per month late this year and 73 per month in 26. A350 rates will hit 7 per month in 2025, and the A380 will increase to 4.3 per month. So in summary, there's cautious optimism that the commercial industry is finally stabilizing and growing. And this is, of course, contingent upon potential new hurdles that might appear. So moving to the defense market, rising geopolitical tensions have been the main driver of recent growth in the defense aerospace market. Additionally, the uncertainty caused by US deglobalization and a pullback of international defense support is changing market dynamics. Defense growth remains strong, with previous spending targets of 2% of GDP likely to be exceeded in the current climate. Within the defense market, fighter aircraft represents the largest segment, with the F-35 making up 40%. In March this year, the US Air Force awarded Boeing an engineering development order for a sixth generation fighter, the F-47. The growth in the fighter market naturally drives an increase in demand for pilots and therefore trainer aircraft. And as a result, the trainer is becoming a strong segment and is projected to grow significantly. Engine manufacturers are expected to benefit from this growth as some trainer programs utilize the same engines as larger fighter aircraft. So in summary, the defense market is potentially the strongest in some time, with growing segments in unmanned aircraft and trainer aircraft. So I'd like to briefly touch upon the recent tariffs. Based on our current business, approximately 75% of Magellan's revenues are unaffected by tariffs. Of the remaining 25%, virtually all is export from Canada into the US, which is currently exempt from tariffs under the Canadian, US, Mexico, and Free Trade Agreement. Primary impact to Magellan is on our US divisions due to 25% US tariff on steel and aluminium, which is less than 1% of our sales. Should the agreement exemption be discontinued, Magellan's customers are mostly responsible to pay for the applicable tariffs as the importer of record. With the Canadian counter tariffs, the majority of our imports into Canada are exempt. So I'll now touch on the key announcements that we made in 2024. So during the year, Magellan announced a number of contract renewals and agreements. We secured the extension of our contract with Airbus for our UK divisions to manufacture major structural wing components for the Airbus single aisle family. In support of NASA's Sounding Rocket program, Magellan will provide Black Bryant vehicles and hardware, excuse me, to Perriton, Canada, from its facility in Winnipeg. As part of our growth strategy in India, we've signed an MOU with ACUS to explore the possibility of establishing a jointly owned engine maintenance, repair and overhaul facility in Belgium, India. Magellan also announced long-term agreements with Pratt & Whitney, and these important contracts cover the supply of complex castings used on a number of legacy and new engine programs. Defence Research and Development Canada is adding a new sub-satellite to the Redwing Space Domain Awareness Project. Through a partnership with Magellan, the UK's Defence Science and Technology and the University of Manitoba, the design, manufacturing and operations for Redwing is led by Magellan Aerospace. In 2025, we've also announced a few press releases. To help address the capacity constraints in the castings market, we've signed an MOU with ACUS to explore the possibility of establishing a jointly owned sand casting facility. And Magellan also amended a long-term revenue sharing agreement with GE Aerospace to include the production of major components for the F414 GE400K aircraft engine and for the Korean KF-21 aircraft program. And we've extended our long-term program with Pratt & Whitney Canada and secured new manufacturing programs award for our Tumkur facility in India. So continuing with the business overview, these charts show revenue by customer and market segments in 2024. On the left, you can see that 36% of our revenue is directly with Airbus and Boeing, which is down from 2019 levels of 40%. Although Airbus is back to previous percentages of revenue, the revenue percentage for Boeing in 2024 continued to lag as production rates expected on certain programs were not achieved. On the top right, 56% of our business is aerostructures, 25% aero engines, including repair and overhaul, 12% is castings, and 7% is specialty products. On the bottom right, you can see 65% of our revenue is derived from commercial business, and our defence business's 35% has decreased from prior year due to the increases in the commercial build rates. So I'm now going to hand over to Eleanor, who's going to do the financial summary.
Okay, touching on highlights for 2024, in terms of revenue, our consolidated revenues for the year ended December 31st, 2024, were $942 million, an increase of 7% from the $880 million achieved last year. Our revenues in Canada did decrease by about 1.8%, as a result of a labor strike last year that we had at one of our divisions. That was more than offset by increases in the United States by 12.1% and in Europe by 14.5%, mainly attributed to build rate recoveries on single aisle programs. Our gross profit came in at $108 million for the year ended December 31st. And that is a comparison to about $89 million in the prior year. The increase in profitability is mainly a result of volume increases, contract rehabilitations on certain programs, and our favorable product mix, offset in part by price increases on materials and supplies.
Well, this year in 2025, we should exceed $1 billion of sales on an annual basis.
That's our forecast, yes.
And our previous peak sales are back in 2019.
Was 2019, it? Where we just hit over $1 billion.
We just hit over a billion, so we're finally getting back to 2019.
We're getting back 6 years later.
6 years later. So the impacts of COVID really took a time to work through both our supplier base and our customers.
That's correct.
And so we're turning sales back to 2019 levels. However, if you look at gross profit, in 2019, our gross profit was 14%. 2020, in 2019, it was over 15%. Right?
That's correct.
So we're still lagging at the gross profit line now.
We will we're still lagging on the gross profit line. We do expect to improve it year over year.
Right.
As the contract rehabilitations come into play and we get back to some of our divisional capacities where we were back in 2019,
So
where
I'm
the levels are not
interested
there.
if you're going to Ivy here today. The message for them is their gross profit, although our sales back to 2020, we're still not back to gross profit levels.
That's
It's
correct.
still work to do. So you're going to reinforce the message
That
the
is
3 days.
part of the strategic initiatives that we're going to be reviewing in the next few days.
Right, Philip?
Yes, absolutely right.
Yeah.
Okay, next chart is
I have to go on. I get the
our next chart shows our adjusted EBITDA percentages increased to 33% from or $24 million, and that was an increase. Increased $24 million to $97 million for the year ended from the year ended 2023. We did see improvements as a result of the increase in revenue and the increase in margin improvements. The next slide is in regards to our capital investment. We invested about 3.8% in of our revenue in capital, which was about $36 million. Investing in new technology not only improves safety and lifespan, but also increases productivity and capacity requirements that we will need in the future.
So, Phil, as we're getting a rebound on our sales back to level we were in 2019, hopefully see that a few next few years, Phil, EBIT starts to climb. We also have more demands for capital for new programs, plus to retool some of our plants, Phil, and modernize some of our plants. Right, Phil?
Exactly, Murray. Yeah, I mean, previous levels were around between 4 and 5%, and that's what we expect to get to
Right.
need going forward.
Right. Yeah. So the good news is sales are going to go profit at the same time. We're going to have more requirements for capital spend.
Yes.
And hopefully, capital spend will also be done for new projects, new programs, and more revenue growth.
Efficiency improvements.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the next slide, we'll touch upon our working capital. Our working capital requirements have continued to grow in line with the growth in our business that we saw over the last number of years. There are several factors that have contributed to the growth in inventory across the industry, not just with Magellan. OEM inventory destocking and the restrictions on certain production aircraft rates have built up inventory levels in the industry. Additionally, long lead times have necessitated companies to maintain higher levels of safety stock, and furthermore, inflationary pressures have played a role in driving up inventory costs.
Well, back in 2019, when we had $1 billion sales last time, our inventory was about $190 million.
That's correct.
Correct. And now our inventory is approaching $280 million on the same sales. So we got roughly an incremental $100 million of working capital invested inventory today that we didn't have back in 2019.
There are some of that, yes. And some of that is the fact that we had enabled material from our suppliers.
Yep.
So we've now had to purchase the material. The
Right.
fact that there's longer lead time. So yes, we are looking at that. That is one of the areas that we are heavily focused on in terms of inventory, as well as you saw the next slide, the
And
contract assets as
right,
well.
and Phil, we did some studies, Phil, our peer group, Phil, and this growth in inventory the last 5 years has been pretty well consistent across the entire industry, Phil, right?
Yes, so
Yes.
when we looked at our peer group, where we were back in 2019, and stock turns were averaging between 4 and 5, and now the average across our peer group is around 3. So everybody's been feeling the same pressures as OEMs insist on buffer stocks and purchasing all your own material and protecting deliveries. So we're sitting about the same as our peer group, but it's still an opportunity.
So, Phil, essentially what's happened, Phil, is our customers, Phil, are demanding more work in progress, more inventory stocks to provide them buffer against disruptions.
Yeah, especially with what's gone on over the last
Right.
3 or 4 years.
So that's the one consequence. And the second consequence is, remember in the past, suppliers would provide material to us to do the work of the projects, and they now trying to offload their balance sheets, they now say, we want you to buy this material purchased directly instead of us supplying it free board. You don't have to buy it and hold it in your books, right, Phil?
That's correct.
So those are the two changes. The result is, Phil, we have to hold roughly another, you look at the bottom slide, between 2019, 2020, roughly another almost $100 million of contract assets and inventory that we held back in 2024, Phil.
Yes, that's
Yeah.
correct, Larry.
Right. But you assured the board we're going to get the number down this year, first time, Phil, right?
It will reduce this year.
Thank you.
So just to highlight on contract assets is really just a subset of our inventory, really just recording our WIP on certain long-term contracts in the year. So we did have an increase over the prior year. We do expect that to come down by this year, the end of this year, and really is just a represents the timing of activity as well as receipts from our customers. That concludes the finance section. I'll hand it back to Phil for
So. Okay, so I want to discuss the challenges and opportunities and an update on our current strategy. So Magellan's business has mostly recovered from the industry challenges of the last few years, as you've just seen. But today in front of us, there are a number of growth opportunities. Customers are ramping up their build rates, they're asking us to take on additional new business, and delivery of these will lead to better utilization of our facilities and improved business performance. The majority of our existing contracts have now been renegotiated and agreed, addressing the inflationary pressures of the last few years. This allows us to focus on profitable growth. One specific area of growth is our sandcastings business, and with the lack of capacity globally, our customers are asking us to invest and grow with them to meet the demand. In parallel to seizing the growth opportunities highlighted earlier, Magellan is taking actions to improve our margins. We continue to grow our footprint in India to meet the price expectations of our customers, as announced. And we have signed MOUs with ACUS, our long-term joint venture partner in India, to explore and launch additional business in MRO and sandcastings. SAP is now live in four of our divisions, with a roadmap to complete the rollout across all the sites. And we're further investing in automation, such as machining, welding, and painting robotics. And to improve the utilization of our facilities, we continuously seek opportunities across our factories, such as launching automated processing cells and more efficiently perform post-cast activities in our labor-intensive areas, such as sand casting facilities. So Magellan will continue to position itself as a global and key supplier to our customers. In order to achieve this, the corporation will continue to develop its people, its technical expertise, and add value to our products to enable growth in selected markets. We will maintain a solid balance sheet through inventory and working capital management to support our business goals. And we'll leverage our technology and engineering capabilities and continue to assess our facilities and products to further exploit our low-cost footprint, thereby improving our financial performance and competitiveness. Continued improvement in our quality through our zero defects program has been deployed across all our sites, and we continue to drive 100% delivery performance, utilizing our Magellan operating system. We want to continue to inspire, develop, and invest in our people to drive success. We continue to direct resources towards our employee engagement and developing our leaders of the future. We want to meet our ESG expectations. So Magellan will continue to provide information critical to our sustainment efforts and monitor evolving climate-related risks and the expectations of all our stakeholders. So Magellan continues to uphold environmental, social, and governance principles in our conduct of business. Our environmental reduction and conservation programs are well established, and we've achieved significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, water usage, and waste generation. We recently launched a program to showcase the climate change initiatives in place across our divisions, not only to recognize our employees, but to also spread ESG awareness to wider audience through social media. Our focus on operational excellence continues to be aligned with our ESG principles. Under environmental, we're decreasing our demand on energy and water, generating less waste and lowering our carbon footprint through operational efficiency improvements. Under social, we take measures to engage and train our employees and create a safe workplace to lower employee turnover and improve our ability to deliver quality products on time. And finally, under governance, our policies ensure we operate with integrity, accountability, and transparency. So in summary, revenue has continued its recovery path, increasing by 63 million year over year, a 7% growth, contributing to a 26 million improvement in profit, which is more than double the amount from the prior year. Our strong balance sheet has allowed us to weather the inflationary pressure and supply chain disruptions in the industry. We're fostering a principle of right first time and have made progress on our zero defects program across all our divisions. And we've renewed significant contracts with major customers and secured new work packages. We continue to develop our employee engagement program with initiatives and action plans at all levels in the business. And we've established an ESG framework and aligned all our sites to ISO 45001. So looking forward, a key priority is driving the business to improving profitability through new business opportunities and improved efficiencies through better utilization of our divisions. We continue to improve our working capital. We will continue to improve our working capital through inventory optimization initiatives. And we're now in a better position to focus and meet our customers' needs with robust plans and continued focus on operational excellence, utilizing the Magellan Operating System. And we'll continue to enhance our engagement program with all our employees. And we'll continue to monitor evolving ESG standards and reporting requirements to strengthen our path to sustainability. So this concludes the presentation. So we would like to take this opportunity to thank all our stakeholders, our customers, and our employees for their continued support and commitment to Magellan. So we're now going to open up the floor to any questions. Who wants to start? Yes.
Such a strong balance sheet, which is amazing. But it seems like you have a lot of firepower to do M&A. Are you actively looking for M&A, and what are the prospects for doing acquisitions?
So we're quite picky when it comes to what we look at, because we know the segments where we're good and where we want to build on those segments. And when you look at our portfolio as well, there's areas that we can see opportunities for growth. You know, we're being pushed heavily on there. If you look at what we've done with the two MOUs, we're also looking at growing generically with some JV partners. And there's two or three businesses that have come across that fit strategically with what we're looking at the moment. Will they come to fruition? I don't know. But we have we have two or three areas that we're looking at the moment. So, yeah, but we need to make sure the synergies are there. I mean, it's no good just adding something and not making it any better than it is. So we need to make sure that it fits with our strategy. Okay.
Capital allocation, otherwise, like the dividend and the buyback, the board cut the dividend a number of years ago. It sounds like the outlook is much more positive now. I mean, is there any thought to revisiting that?
Yes.
I'm Bob Tattersall. I'm a former institutional shareholder and currently a individual shareholder. I'm encouraged to see the big improvement in net income, although, to be frank, a large part of that comes from a lower tax rate. But even with the higher net income this year, or year just finished, return on equity is still only about 4%. And so I'm a little concerned that with all of this explosive growth, that you'll bring in lots of revenues with pitiful margins. And the ROE has to get higher than that if the stock is ever to get above book value per share. And the poor guy that's held the stock for 30 years, if he's ever to make any money, you need to have a much higher return on equity. And I'm not sure it has to be margins. I think your chairman, in his ad hoc comments, put his finger on it. There seems to be a lot of redundancy in the balance sheet. You know, I'm retired, so I have time on my hands. I Google mapped every single location, and you can't tell a lot from Google Maps, but a lot of them look to be small and dumpy and unadjacent to places where you could actually handle additional revenue. So my question, I guess, is first of all, can you be confident that you'll have better profit margins on the new business you bring in? And secondly, don't you have an awful lot of redundant assets on the balance sheet that would improve the asset turnover without actually having to increase revenues?
So, answer to your first question, I mean, we only take on business that's going to give us the right profit margins. Okay. So, obviously, through the bad years, shall we say, with inflation at record levels, what you put in a bid and the contracts that you've won, I mean, you can see most businesses that went out the window. So we've addressed those. And when you talk about the new business, so we renegotiated existing contracts, which is good. We lost very little work in that. And those margins will be what we expect them to be going forward. And when we bid new business, we're very careful to ensure that we are covering what we need to cover, because material exposure has been a problem historically in a lot of people's contracts, with certain materials and certain alloys have caught people out in the past. So, you know, there's some areas that we've had to focus on to make sure we get it right in business going forward. So everything that we bid, we're expecting to achieve the margins that we want. And then when you talk about our assets, yeah, I mean, we've got 19 facilities. And with some of those are not fully utilized. Yeah, I mean, we know which ones those are, and our business development team are actively looking in those areas to ensure, because if we've got a $1 million machine sat there now, that's ready to grow, and if it's the build rates are not going to fill it for one reason or another, then you know the BD team are looking actively to make sure that we can fill those machines, and therefore some of the bids have no capital in them. Not sure if that answers your complete question.
Yeah, I mean, Bob, that we do have some redundant assets in our books. We do have we're sitting here today. We used to own this entire site at one time. We sold the site for $45 million. They built Amazon distribution warehouse. So we now lease this plant long term, which is on our books now as a contract. What? Apple asset liability lease on here. We do have a number of pieces of property around the world that are surplus. Then we have a big chunk of property down at Fort Erie, down the old fleet plant down there. We've had appraisals that show us worth tens of millions of dollars. So we are moving those things. One thing I've learned in this business, it is a things don't move quickly in this business. And we have contracts that go back 10, 15, 20 years that we're just getting resolved with clients today in terms of the final closeout of the contracts. And if you rush to a decision, the business, it costs you money. You've got to be a long-term view. And so I think the opportunity we have is we have a lot tied up in inventory and contract assets. I think you guys, if we can take some liquidity out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we do have now growth opportunities where in some of our operations, we are looking, either we have excess capacity plants, the plants aren't full, we have lots of capacity to grow internally without a lot of incremental cost. And when you talk about our plans, I mean, we've got report to the board today. We just had Airbus into one of our operations in the UK. They're looking at interesting new work, and they were very impressed by the nature of the operation internally of the plan. Is that right, Jeff? Went there with some.
Yeah.
So I think our operations are across the board pretty well structured and pretty well set up from a customer point of view. That was the reason not the Airbus, Jeff, right, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely.
What did the Airbus guys say?
So we had a delegation from Airbus to visit one of our facilities in Europe. Recently they brought, it was around 12 people in total, and they wanted to take a look at the operation with the opportunity to grow and expand it. And they came from there with some of the most positive comments I've ever heard from customers, which is great because it gives a sense that, you know, our strategy is clear, but also presentation of our facilities is excellent.
Clearly COVID, Bob, was a hit to the sector. I mean, it knocked the shit out of this entire sector in terms of travel went down, so our customers weren't flying as much. They all downsized their bid, and the sector, it's taken us 3 or 4 years to get through the restructuring that was required in the new world, and I think now we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. Hopefully it's a good light, not train coming at us. But I think that to go to our balance sheet comment, I think the lesson I've learned is you want to have a strong balance sheet in the sector to get through the ups and downs, right? We went through a dividend a number of years ago because I thought it was important to pay the shareholders. I was not as a shareholder, I wasn't 100% happy that took the dividend down, but I think it was a prudent thing to do at the time.
Any more questions? Yep.
Sounds like 2025 is shaping up well. We talked about revenue getting above 2019 and still some work to go on the margin side. But if you look out a couple of years beyond 2025, like what's the sort of blue sky in terms of revenue? And could margins go even above where they were in 2019?
Our forecast is showing that we're going to continue to grow the top line and continue to grow the bottom line. I'm not going to give you exact numbers, but yes, both of those are growing.
What are the main opportunities and concerns that you have from both the top line and bottom line perspective looking out to?
Well, I would say on the top line, it would be Airbus is a bit slow at the moment with a lot of stock around them. And Boeing getting above rate 38 and getting the approval from the FAA to go up above rate 38. Boeing have been really slow, and therefore, when you look at where we're performing and where we've got capacity, it will be in those facilities that were working predominantly on the Boeing aircraft at rates around 50, and now they're doing, you know, with the strike and everything that's gone on, it's been very slow. So our numbers don't have the benefit of Boeing getting back to where they want to get to and their growth. So, and if you look at Airbus talking about growing from the current rate of around 50 to 60, going up to 75 in the next few years, those contracts alone, those contracts that we have alone will show significant growth. We have other areas of opportunities, and then we talk about our Rockwood plant and our Winnipeg facility and our defense business, where we are following up on a lot of opportunities there as well at the moment. So we want to grow both sides. And take advantage of customers needing capacity and suppliers like ourselves.
And castings.
Yeah, and castings. We mentioned castings is a great growth opportunity. There's a lack of capacity out there. You know, hence the reason we looked at potentially a low-cost source for those as well. Plus, we're looking at growing both of our US and Canadian divisions. So we're looking at additional facilities and additional equipment to meet that demand. It's significant.
So we have got built-in growth, essentially, not the world. I mean, you know, I've talked to some airlines recently, and their bookings are down between 10 and 15% year-over-year right now. So you've heard some discussions with Delta, United, they've withdrawn their consensus forecast. They're just, the market's so uncertain now, given the whole, you know, so there may be some fallback, but assuming that stabilizes on the air travel, you know, right now Airbus is at 50, they're trying to go to 70, Boeing's at 37 on the 777, they're kind of going back to 50 or 60. We're on both those platforms in a material way. So that's built in organic growth right there, or inherent growth. I don't call it organic growth, it's inherent growth. Then on top of that, we do have probably, I don't know if I use the word bursting, but the word you use bursting, here's a peer marketing guy. And so we do have a number of authorities, organic growth opportunities that are reports that we haven't seen in some public. I think that because of the growth, and I think it's evident that, you know, governments around the world have all stated they're going to increase their defense spending materially. Some of it's going to have to flow back to the supplier base. And Canada is probably one of the real laggards in that. So in some ways, we should be better positioned in Canada than elsewhere. So, you know, there are some positive on the horizon, it looks like, but I'm always cautious because there's always done attempts in, you know, the tariffs. We don't know right now what's going to happen there in terms of, right? So,
yeah. Any more?
The bottom line recovery, like, is that mostly just the ramp that we're talking about in commercial aircraft production, or is there a lot of contract renegotiation still to go?
Most of our contracts have been renegotiated now. We haven't seen all the benefits of those renegotiations yet. But a lot of it is better utilization of our facilities as you put more volume through an existing machine that cost you $3 million. And as the rate goes up, you get the benefits with no additional cost. Any more questions? Okay. In that case, I'd like to say thank you for everybody for attending. And if there's no more questions, have a safe journey home. Thank you very much.